Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. An American in Paris is a new stage musical based on the 1951 film of the same name. The film, directed by Vincent Minnelli and starring Gene Kelly and Leslie Caron, was itself inspired by this 1928 orchestral composition by George Gershwin. The new musical, set in the City of Lights just after World War II, features classic songs by George and Ira Gershwin, including I Got Rhythm, S'Wonderful, But Not For Me, and They Can't Take That Away, and orchestral music from George Gershwin, including Concerto in F and An American in Paris. The show is currently running at the Palace Theater on Broadway and is nominated for 12 Tony Awards, including Best Musical. Choreographer Christopher Wheeldon directs the show, which features a book from Tony Award nominee and Pulitzer Prize finalist Craig Lucas, sets and costumes by six-time Tony winner Bob Crowley, and lighting by four-time Tony winner Natasha Katz. Brandon Uranowitz plays Adam Hochberg, a composer and former soldier living in Paris. Brandon is nominated for a Tony Award for Best Performance by an Actor in a Featured Role in a Musical. The role was played by Oscar Levant in the film.
The role is quite different than the role it is in the movie, and the show itself is quite different than the movie. The similarity is that he plays the piano. In our version, though, he's a composer struggling after the war to sort of find his voice and find inspiration. So he's working on, at the start of the show, he's working on a concerto that's just not clicking for him. And, you know, through the course of the show, he gets commissioned to write a ballet for this woman, Lise, who is hired to be the prima ballerina of this new ballet. So he gets commissioned to write this new ballet and falls in love with this woman and is still struggling to find his voice amongst, you know, all of the darkness and the messy place that Paris was post-World War II and post-Nazi occupation and after the liberation. And sort of by the end, even though he might not get the girl, his experience through fighting for her and fighting for love and all of that inspires him to create this sort of magical, he becomes the toast of Paris, really, at the end of the show, because he's written this beautiful, wonderful, positive, celebratory ballet because of this woman that he's fallen in love with. And I should also mention that he's got, like, an injury from the war. He fought in the war, too, so there's a lot of shame behind that. And, you know, in terms of preparing for the role, anytime I work on something that's either been inspired by or adapted from something, I don't really like to focus on the source material as much as I do working with the text that I have in front of me. Just because I don't really, I never want to do a second-rate impression of someone. You know what I mean? Even though it's a reference point that people expect and have, you know, and are looking forward to, I just sort of trust that that's in the material, including all the other things that are in the material that I also need to include and incorporate into the role. So I like to start from the ground up. I only watched American in Paris once during this whole process, and that was before the audition, just to familiarize myself with what. But because Craig Lucas, our book writer, wrote such a different story that really includes a lot about World War II, that's not in the movie, I really focused on what he gave me and who this person was. I figured because it's so different, it's a different person, it's a different human who's got different wants and needs and opinions. A lot of my preparation was focusing on the war and what it was like to fight in the war and what it was like for a Jewish American fighting in the war specifically. Yeah, I guess I didn't mention that yet, that my character is Jewish. So there's a lot behind that, fighting the Nazis, really, in Europe at that time. So there was a lot of that.
How is your character different or similar to you? What are the
like the hooks that get you immediately, that help you build all of that other stuff that you have to learn and process?
A lot of Adam is sort of like one of his big defense mechanisms is humor and dry wit as sort of like a deflection of things that either make him uncomfortable or unhappy. And that is so something that I have done my entire life. I always try to use humor and wit to make light of whatever's happening in front of me. I feel like if you can't laugh at it, then it's not worth it, kind of thing. And nothing should be taken too personally. Also, on the flip side, he has a darkness about him. He has I don't want to say a negative view of the world, but it's a very, it's just a dark view of the world. He's come out of this dark, dark time, and I can relate to that sort of filter, you know, looking at the world through those lenses. But mostly it's his sarcastic dry wit and his timing. He's just really sharp and acerbic in a way, and I can be, to a fault sometimes.
You did the show in Paris before I came to New York. What was that like?
I mean, it's indescribable. You expect when you're working on a new Broadway show to go out of town. You never expect to go to, like, Paris, you know? Like, sure. That's insane. It feels like a million years ago, but it wasn't. And I tried so hard to soak up every second of my experience there just because I couldn't believe what was happening. I mean, this whole thing has been a whirlwind of, like, dream come true after dream come true. And I mean, going to Paris was not even a dream I knew I had, really, but it was. And to do something that was so seemingly important to them, especially when we didn't know how they were going to respond. You know, the liberation after the Nazi occupation in Paris was actually, it's not what you think it might be. It's not all rainbows and sunshine afterwards. You know, you don't just reset. And so it was sort of like a shameful period of time for the French people, the Parisian people. And we don't shy away from what that was like. We were a little hesitant. We didn't know how they were going to respond to it. And they responded beautifully to it. I think they had a lot of respect for us for acknowledging something that has maybe been misconstrued or misinterpreted by people, you know. I think it gave us a good name, you know. I feel like Parisians get a bad rap for being rude to Americans or something. That was just something that everybody was saying, like, oh, they hate Americans. They loved us. And I think it's because we didn't shy away from the things that are meaningful to them.
How long were you over there?
Like 2 months.
Did you have time to see the Eiffel Tower and things like
that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did. And if we didn't have time, we made time, yeah. Really, because, like, it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I don't expect that to ever happen again in my life, to go over to Paris to work for a long period of time. So, yeah, we totally, totally took time to take in the city. But the amazing thing about Paris is... You can make the time and make the plans to go see, you know, certain touristy things like the Eiffel Tower and the, you know, the Louvre and all of that stuff. And of course we did that. But what I love about Paris is that no matter where you're going, when you're going from point A to point B, the getting there is the most beautiful, spectacular thing. You can turn around any corner and just be like, it just takes your breath away everywhere you go. So, I mean, just walking the streets every day was like a gift, you know, not even just making time to go to all of the touristy places. It's like everywhere is beautiful, you know, it's great.
When did you begin performing and how did you know that you wanted to pursue it to these lofty positions we find ourselves in now?
Oh my God, it's crazy. I wasn't particularly good at sports as a kid. But when I was 3, my parents took me to see Peter Pan. And, you know, I mean, a 3-year-old hasn't lived a lot of his life. However, my mom did say that when I was there, I was like on the edge. I almost fell off my seat. I was so at the edge of my seat. But she said that she had never seen my face look like that before. She had never seen that, and it was just the magic of it all. And she was like, huh, okay. So, like, when I was actually able to be a functional human and not a three-year-old, when I was, like, six, she put me into extracurricular theater stuff at this place called Performers Theater Workshop, and I grew up in New Jersey. And I was going there, like, three times a week, and I was actually so nervous to go. I still get stage fright, so I think it's just all part of that, but... yeah, I guess I was six. And I just, I don't know, there's something about going on stage and just like, sort of like letting yourself go and being able to play pretend that I just connected to on some level. And again, I wasn't very good at sports. So it was just something that I kept doing. And my parents supported me with that throughout the rest of my life. And then when I was, you know, I grew up in New Jersey, right outside of New York City. So there were a lot of people and a lot of kids sort of trying to get into the professional gig. And I was like, I want to do that. And so my dad, my parents got me, like, took me to get headshots and took me on certain, you know, auditions. And I started acting professionally when I was like nine, did that until I was like 13. And then realized that there was a lot of resentment towards me, actually, from other kids who weren't in it. So I was like, you know what? I would rather go to school and not have people think that I'm some sort of, I have this like weird superiority complex, which I never did, you know? It's just what I was doing, and it was what brought me joy. They would go and do their baseball games and their soccer games, and I would go on an audition, even though it would make me so nervous, but I would do it anyway. So I decided to go back to school and stop the whole professional thing until I went back to college, and then I got back into it.
When did you find out that you had gotten this show?
About 2 years ago, we did a 29-hour reading of it, which is just, you know, the first time you get to hear something out loud. And it's just at music stands, and it's for like a very, you know, small group of possible investors, producers, the like. At that time, it was just a, Craig Lucas had just written like a 20-page treatment of what the show would, the structure of the show would be. There was no dialogue, there was no script that I had gotten, and it just sounded so cool. And so different and unique. I mean, there are not many shows on Broadway, I can't really think of any at the moment, that include like orchestral pieces that are played in full with, you know, just like dancing on Broadway. I mean, you know, the orchestral pieces in our show get as much attention as the sung songs and the dialogue and all that stuff. So I was so intrigued by this whole thing. And then I went in and I really wanted it. And I got the reading, and I was lucky enough that they kept me throughout the rest of the process, through our workshop and Paris and now Broadway. And yeah, so it was like 2 years ago, really.
Yeah, that's a long process.
Yeah, it is. Although I have to say, in terms of like creating a new Broadway show,
It's a minute.
It's kind of like a minute, yeah. I mean, there are certain shows, I know The Visit, for example, you know, which I can't wait to see because I hear it's awesome. That's been kicking around for like 15 years, you know? It takes time. And we've just been lucky enough that we had producers and people who believed in Christopher's vision and Craig's vision and in us to bring it.
You get to sing the beautiful, heartbreaking song, But Not For Me.
It's one of my favorites of all time. I mean, I grew up listening to Gershwin. I mean, my dad is a huge Gershwin fanatic. He took me to see Crazy for You on Broadway like 7 times. Mm-hmm. So that in and of itself is a dream. To be able to sing But Not For Me on a Broadway stage is like the ultimate. It doesn't get better than that, really.
They're writing songs of love, but not for me. A lucky stars above, but not for me. With love to lead the way, I found more skies of gray than any Russian play could guarantee.
When I'm for you,
Brandon Uranowitz singing But Not For Me from An American in Paris with castmate Jill Pace in an event at New York Public Radio's The Green Space this past February. The cast recording for An American in Paris will be released early next month by Masterworks Broadway. You mentioned that you get very nervous on auditions and still have stage fright.
Yeah.
How do you cope with it? What do you have to do to get out there?
Just trust myself, which is not easy to do. It's really not easy to do, especially when you're just told no, you know, 99% of this business is being told no for whatever reason. And it's just, I don't know that it'll ever get easier. I don't know if I'll ever not get nervous. Because really, I mean, when you walk out on stage or you walk into an audition room, you truly feel exposed and naked and vulnerable. And that's a hard thing to cope with. So I guess I just try and trust myself. And I really just, it all boils down to the work, I guess. If I feel like I've really worked hard and prepared as much as I possibly could, then it's sort of out of my control beyond that point. The only thing that I can control is my work. And so as long as I feel like I've put in all the effort that I can, that's the only really, the real way to cope. I mean, I can't go into an audition room and feel unprepared. So the nerves just come from wanting to be liked, really, and wanting to be accepted in some way. But coping just comes down to the work. That's really all you can do, I guess.
Congratulations again on your Tony nomination.
Thank you.
And thank you for speaking with me today.
Thank you for having me. It was fun. Thanks.
Brandon Uranowitz plays Adam Hochberg in An American in Paris and is nominated for a Tony Award for his performance. The show is currently running at the Palace Theater on Broadway in New York City. The American Theater Wing's Tony Awards will air on CBS on Sunday, June 7th. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.